Hey, this is Megan from Swish and Flick. I wanted to tell you all about Book of the Month. I love the curated list of books that is available every month. It makes it so easy to find something for you. Book of the Month focuses on new and upcoming authors. It's really helped me to venture beyond my regular genres. I am so excited at the start of every month to see what Book of the Month has picked. And what's better than getting a cute blue box in the mail with a book in it? I was so excited to see this month The Paradise Problem by Christina Loren was a pick. You guys know how much I love their writing. I've already started it, and it's everything you could expect from a Christina Loren novel. Book of the Month is offering a great intro offer for the month of May. You get your first book for $5 with the code PETALS, P-E-T-A-L-S, and shipping is always free. Head on over to bookofthemonth.com and use code PETALS.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Now a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp. Tiffany here from Swish, and I want to talk about being a problem solver. In my classroom, I'm always telling my ickle-firsties to be problem solvers. In first grade, that's one thing, but in adult life, it's a whole other. It can be really difficult to train your brain to go into a problem-solving mode. Maybe you don't even know where to start. It's a challenge that we all face in life, but when you learn to better help your brain find solutions, it's truly a great feeling. And if you've ever been thinking of giving therapy a try, BetterHelp is a great option. BetterHelp is convenient, it's accessible, it's affordable, and it's all online. And on top of that, they match you with a therapist just by filling out a brief survey. So when you want to be a better problem solver, therapy can get you there. Visit betterhelp.com/swish today to get 10% off your first month. That's better, HELP.com/swish.
Welcome to Swish and Flick, an All Potter podcast.
Swish and Flick. Everyone, Swish and Flick.
Hello and welcome to a Scamander Story episode of Swish and Flick. I'm Tiffany.
I'm Megan.
I'm Katie.
I'm Sarah.
And today we are coming at you with our interpretations of theories for Crimes of Grindelwald. So stay tuned and theorize along with us. What did we witness and what will we see in the next films? First, I am going to tell you my reactions to seeing the movie because you didn't get to hear them in the last Scamander stories. Yes.
I think it's hysterical. I should just write random things in here and you're going to read it because you verbatim just wrote what I wrote. I could be like, Sarah's the coolest and you're going to read it.
I would read it. I'm like Ron Burgundy.
Oh my God.
What's the teleprompter say? I'll read it. I'll read anything. Do it next cool time. Yeah. So what was my reaction? Well, I liked it.
First of all, did you like the movie?
Yes. I enjoyed the movie. I thought it was good. It gave me feels, the WB symbol, at the beginning. I melted into my chair one time. I believe I hit you a lot.
So I know you cried when you saw the WB.
I did. I just love it. It just brings me back, you know?
I do believe towards the end when you melted, you also said, I did Kermit arms.
I did do Kermit arms. Yeah. I was like, whoa! It was just like, it was awesome.
But, like, how do you feel about all the information you were told? Like, about who Credence is and, like, I don't know, the big things. Nagini. I almost called him Jude Law. What's his name in the movie? Dumbledore.
Oh, God.
What's going on? So, I don't mind Credence being a Dumbledore. I think it would be really interesting, and I definitely need to know all the deets about how that came about. Especially since we heard nothing of it in the Potter story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Before you go on, I do want to point out, we're going to do two parts of this, so we're going to talk about Credence more in the second part, but But I think that, like, all of us are in agreement that, like, he's a Dumbledore. At least I think he's a Dumbledore.
Yeah, I don't know, like, in what form he's a Dumbledore, but, like, he's definitely connected somehow to the Dumbledores. Mm-hmm. Whether he's, like, I don't think he can be, it's impossible for him to be a full brother to Albus, I think. But that doesn't mean that, just because he's a Dumbledore doesn't mean that he's a brother. Mm-hmm. I think that, like, and again, like, yeah, we'll go more in depth with this in the next episode, but, like, just because Grindelwald said brother, like, he used that term in other places in the film, like...
Could be a broad term.
Right, it's a pretty broad term, yeah. So, like, it could be just, like, a relative in any way, I think, or just a form that's connected to a Dumbledore.
Hmm.
I don't know, that's kind of the theory I'm leaning towards, but, yeah. What about Queenie, Tiffany?
Queenie, oh, my heart breaks for her because, I mean, you can just feel her emotion within that whole entire movie, and she is so torn. And I think it's interesting that this gets, like, brought up, especially since we did those episodes, like, about the Salem witch trials and the International Statute of Secrecy and how, you know, how different it was between, like, European wizards and American wizards, and she wants to go against it, and Jacob's just not having it, and he just won't leave, and I'm like, I love you, but why wouldn't you just go?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that, I don't know. I have got some pretty cool Queenie theories in this doc that I didn't honestly even read about until today, and they're pretty awesome. I had some, like, in the back of my mind to begin with, but, like, just doing a Google search of Queenie theories, Crimes of Grindelwald, was pretty interesting, and, like, her connection with Jacob and, like, how Jacob reacts, and I think, unfortunately, for Queenie in this film, she got probably the heavy-handed cut of David Yates with a lot of information that was taken out about her, is my guess. And I think that her character development really suffered in this film because of, I'm sure, things that got cut or things that just, like, didn't get included even from the original screenplay, like, showing. I think that we missed out on a lot of character development for her, which is why some people are really confused. But I'm sure that it'll be answered and we'll learn more about it later. At least I hope so.
Yeah, and that's something that I've not read the screenplay yet. I'm planning on reading it over my Christmas break, which I will be on when this airs. And so I want to see what kind of tidbits are in there that got cut, but...
There's nothing. They edited the screenplay before they released it. It matches the movie.
Yeah, like, there's nothing reading that wasn't in the movie. Yeah.
Is that, like, said somewhere, too, or did you guys just figure that out on your own?
I think that I haven't read it yet, but that's, I've heard from multiple people.
You've heard?
That they say that nothing you know what? Out of the ordinary is
that
in
sucks.
There. Yeah.
That straight up sucks, because, you know, when you have somebody who's going to cut stuff like that, like, we need everything, because Joe intended us to have what she wrote, correct?
Right. Yeah,
so
I would think so,
yeah. So I don't understand how these things go through. Here's where I'm getting heated. Give me all the details, because now how am I going to figure stuff out? Because I don't have a novel of this, and I can't fill in the blanks. It's all a movie. So whatever you need me to know, your subtleties or whatever, I don't have them all, because you didn't give them all to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
That makes me mad.
The one thing with me that at the very beginning, when you see that guy when they're in the meeting with, like, Newt and his brother and the other Oars,
you
feel like you're supposed to know who that is, and I have no idea. And then reading it, I was like, oh, it tells you in the screenplay he's a beast hunter. That would have been relevant information, and been like, oh, that's why Newt hates him so much, because he's hunting beasts and killing them and capturing them.
Give me a stinking name tag that says beast hunter. Like, if you're not going to give me something else, God.
I know that a lot of people want to point the blame on these kind of things on Joe. And, like, she has a lot of saying things, but at the same time, in the movie industry, there are so many people who are touching this product before it comes out to us. Like, it's honestly, it's not Joe's fault. She wrote the screenplay as she intends it. And, everybody knows how much I love Order of the Phoenix, and that was, like, David Yates' first showing, and I like him. I like what he brings to the films, but he is known to take a lot out. So,
and for what?
Right.
You know?
Yeah, and it's like, especially when this is all we get. Like, it was one thing when it was a book to movie, because we still had the books. But, like, this Correct. Is all we're getting. So, like, don't you dare cut out stuff that is important.
Is it, though?
I don't know.
She'll backtrack?
Maybe. That would be cool, but...
I mean, here's how I feel. I'm Joe, right? I have all these things in my head. And people want to tell me, okay, you only have so long for this movie, right? We can only include so many things. They have to be the big hit things, right?
Mm-hmm.
You only have 5 films to do this in. Okay, now I'm feeling like my world and my characters, my person is being chopped up and pieced out. How am I going to fix that myself? I'm going to novelize it.
Yeah.
Dear Joe?
I will say that when she first started writing, like, I'm assuming, like, an outline of, like, what she wanted to tell. She was only planning on doing 3 movies, but there was so much information that she's like, no, I need 5.
We're still not getting originally... the information, you know?
Well, I mean, and we have to think about it, too, that there's 3 more movies coming. And that's part of, like, my thing is, like... Did I love the movie? Yeah, it was all right. I'm grateful for the information that we got, but I need to see, like, the whole picture, and I'm just seeing a piece of it. So yeah. I'm still excited to see what else we're going to get, but I also trust Joe that, like, she's going to give it to us. We just have to wait, and I'm not a patient person, so.
Oh, preach.
I wonder if it's going to turn into more than 5 films, honestly, because... Just at this rate, with, like, all the information that we were missing from this film, that, like, in interviews and stuff, like, the actors have talked about, oh, we filmed it, got cut, we filmed this scene, it got mm-hmm. cut. Like, just based on that, like, there's already so much that's gotten cut. Where is she going to put that if she was already only planning 3 more films? I mean, it could turn into 6. Like, I don't know. I think it might turn into 6.
Well, not that this man... Oh, sorry. Ahead. What? I was going to say, not that this matters too much, but with cutting scenes, they talked about how they filmed this scene for, like, days, that it was, like, right at, like, a certain time of sunset with these croissants, and they were, like, one, that was our favorite scene to shoot, and they were saying those are the best croissants they ever had in their lives. But the scene got cut. They're like, so, and it was more than one person, like, I know the girl that played Nagini, her first name is Claudia
Kim.
Was saying, she goes, those croissants were amazing. That was my favorite scene. Like, a couple other people are like, it was an amazing, beautifully set scene, but they could only film it, like, for 5 minutes a day because of the sunset.
I heard that they filmed it for weeks. Like,
that's what I'm saying. It was a long time.
It was a long time. I mean, weeks. Every day they would go at that time to film 5 to 10 minutes.
Where can I get these croissants at?
Paris.
The fruit there is very delish.
My question also is, how much, did this make at the box office in comparison to the...
Not nearly as much.
That also worries me a little bit. Mm-hmm. If these films aren't successful, are they going to cut down how many are in the series?
But I wonder, like, so with, George Lucas, when he made the first 3 Star Wars movies, like, made a deal, because he was, again, was like Joe, he was writing, like, the script and everything he wanted to do, and he was only going to do 1 movie, and it turned into 3.
Yeah.
And he went to them, and he's like, I'm only going to, like, sign the contracts and all this stuff if you let me, no matter how much this first movie makes, because he didn't think it was going to do well. Like, he's like, it's no one's going to really want to watch this, but I want these to be made.
Yeah.
So he made them sign a contract that no matter how well the first one did or didn't do well, like, in the box office, that all 3 were going to be made. So I wonder if she made that kind of deal, being like,
so no matter what, these are still being done.
Yeah. I mean, it still made a crazy amount of money, but, like, not nearly as much as the first one.
I think
it's made $600 million. I mean, I know I'd say that's enough to keep going. Sure, it's probably, it's not as much as the Potter ones, clearly, but it's close enough where I would say that she's safe right now still.
Yeah. Well, hopefully she made a deal, because I need all of these to be made. And Star Wars got made into novels, so I'm just saying. All right.
Did he write them, though?
Probably not. I mean, they probably just used his...
Because there's tons... Well, I mean, there's just tons of Star Wars movies. I mean, there are, but there's also tons of books.
Yes. No, I don't think he wrote all of them. I mean, I could be wrong. Somebody call me out. I'm no Star Wars expert, so...
So, how about...
Yeah.
Dumbledore. Tell me your feelings about him.
He is yummy.
How did you feel about, like, him and Grindelwald, like, them? You know what I mean? Like, the blood pact, all that stuff.
I enjoyed it. I'm glad that it's something different in relation to, like, an unbreakable vow, because we know that, obviously, this can be broken in some kind of way. Kudos to Sarah.
I don't remember if I called it a blood pact or not, but I knew it was some type of, like, I wondered, I should say, back in that episode.
It's a spit pact.
One would say it's bloody brilliant.
Ooh.
You're welcome.
You're on it today. No, I thought it was... I liked it. And I liked that you could feel the tension. You know, they told us we weren't really going to get anything about their relationship within this movie, but you could feel it.
Oh, yeah.
At least with Dumbledore, I think.
The Mirror of Era said for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta say, I feel like their, quote, relationship was always one-sided. I don't think...
It didn't change how I felt. We know that Grindelwald is a sweet talker. We know that he sweet talks Credence all the time, especially in the first film. And I definitely think that Grindelwald is a kind of person that will just do and say to get what he wants. I don't think there was any romantic feelings for him, but he acted like there was.
Yeah, I think his goal was to get the blood pact.
If you can't feel that with Credence, check yourself.
Well, even in this one, like, when Queenie asks Rosie or whatever her first name is, and she's like, oh, are you guys, like, together? She's like, we're just very, very close. Like, he's going to be manipulative with everyone. Like,
everyone.
Saying it with, saying whatever they want to hear, and, like, if he needs to put on the little charm... I mean, that's
he would manipulate a tree if he had to. He would turn it on for that tree. I'm just saying, that's who he is. But yeah, I like to see that. I'm excited to see more, you know.
How about the brother Scamander plus their love interest?
Yeah.
Do you think?
I mean, like, how did you feel about it is essentially what I'm asking.
What do you mean? Like, what's her face?
What'd you think about their little love triangle going on?
I don't think it was a love triangle for Newt.
No, I don't think so either. Lita was confused, to say the least.
I think Lita was still completely in love with Newt, for sure.
For sure.
And it kind of makes me wonder if she was with his brother just to be closer to Newt.
Yeah.
Lovely.
I hope not, because it breaks my heart for him. Like, I was going to like him.
People do that, you know?
Theseus. Also, the dude's art, well, when I say our age, he's like, I believe it, born in the 90s. He's 6 years younger, the guy that plays Theseus. And he looks younger, too, than Newt. So that throws me off that he is the older brother. But just a random fact.
But no, I don't... I think maybe if Newt had any kind of feelings, they were over when he saw Tina.
Yeah, for sure. He's got a pretty big soft spot for Tina.
Oh my god. And I just love watching Eddie play him, because he just, he makes my heart melt. He is so stinking cute. And I love the salamander eyes.
Yes.
It was so cute.
It was amazing. I loved it.
And my final question that's going to lead into you, how do you feel about McGee, my friend?
Chew doing at Hogwarts. Episode title. There's probably more one-liners to come. Let's just get on into that. What is McGee doing at Hogwarts, y'all?
Hogwarts is how you just said that.
Hogwarts.
Hogwash.
I knew you were going to say it. That's why I did. Honestly. Give me your thoughts. I'm going to go to Sarah first with this, because you have your whole little timeline going on. Big timeline. Well, and you're the best with dates. So,
I just want to tell people that, like, it says, I believe, not only in the credits, but in the book, that it's McGonagall.
Correct. It is Minerva.
So we, sorry, that's what I meant to say. It is Minerva. So we know it's her. And I don't know if you put in the article that, like, I read about
the old Pottermore.
It, well, like, oh, I don't know. It, did the old Pottermore say 1938?
All right.
Because
okay.
Here's the thing.
Hold on.
So in, I'm going to tell you my little timeline. This is what we believe to be true.
Give it to me.
So far, but we don't know yet. So basically we know that she was quizzed by Umbridge in book 5 about how long she had been teaching there. And she said like 30, she'd been there 35 years. We'd also known that she had teached. Nope, that's not even proper words. She, after she left Hogwarts, she graduated, and then she spent like a summer at home, and then moved to London to work at the ministry for 2 years. So, as of right now, pre this movie coming out, we knew that she went to Hogwarts, graduated, spent a summer at home in Scotland, and then she went to work at the ministry for 2 years, and then went back to Hogwarts to teach.
Right.
And then we see this movie come out, and she's there in 1927 when we go back and they see her with Dumbledore and all that stuff. And she's a teacher.
Yes.
Because he calls her Professor McGonagall.
Right.
So, like, how can that happen if she was born? If you did the math, it was 1938, so that was, you know, she'd be born right around now, basically. Or, you know what I mean. So, my thing is...
Where are you getting 1938 from doing your math?
If you do the math.
Okay,
if you do the math of 35 years... Subtract it from 1995, I believe. So you subtract 35 years, then 2 years after that, and that's when she graduated Hogwarts, then, you know, when you're 17, so 17, yeah.
Well, the article that I pulled said that her birth year was established as 1935 in the old Pottermore.
Okay, so that's it, okay.
So
then she changed it.
She be... Well...
Because then someone said there was, like, an article... Because in that book, it said she grew up in, like, the early 1900s, right?
Yeah.
So, you could say that she, like, was born in 1900 and grew up in the early 1900s. But other people have, like, theories, which you talk about, Tiffany.
Okay, hold on. There's a video in my article. So, yes, Megan.
I don't see this article posted in the doc from you, but Hypeable had a really good one.
I don't have that one. So
that says, when was McGonagall born? Canon might suggest 1889, not 1935.
How?
And it says, why fans thought McGonagall was born in 1935. People assumed basically she was born in 1935 by calculating, just like Sarah was talking about, the quote from Order of the Phoenix. This scene takes place in 1995. So then you subtract, and then with the information from the short story book on the ebook, that kind of assumes that maybe she was born in 1935 and enrolled in 1947 at Hogwarts. But that's only by looking at these two quotes. So if you have more information to consider now, there's a significant evidence that points to McGonagall being born much earlier than that, and it says witches and wizards are known to have a much longer life expectancy than muggles, so we know this from Albus and Aberforth Dumbledore, Bathilda Bagshot, on and on and on. So a 60-year-old witch would not be considered old when you have characters like Aberforth running around at age 110.
running around.
It says here, in the Harry Potter series, both Hermione and Madame Pomfrey seem to consider Professor McGonagall as old and frail, potentially making her well over 100. So Hermione in Order of the Phoenix says, it'll be his giant blood, said Hermione shakily. It's very hard to stun a giant. They're like trolls, really tough, but poor Professor McGonagall. 4 stunners straight in the chest, and she's not exactly young, is she? And then Madame Pomfrey says in Order of the Phoenix as well, she was transferred to St. Mungo's this morning, 4 stunning spells straight to the chest. At her age, it's a wonder they didn't kill her.
What is her age?
So, like, that makes you question, because, like, really in the Wizarding World, 60 would not make you...
Old.
That would be, like, so, our, like, 35, 40, right? Kind of.
Yeah.
My only thing with that, it still doesn't make any sense that she would be... a professor at Hogwarts when Newt and Tina, like, or not Newt and Tina, Newt and Lita are there, like, in her flashback when she, like, does whatever to the girl because they're talking smack about her. And then they, like, run for Professor McGonagall because she's younger than they are because Newt was born in 87.
Yeah.
No, 1897.
Right, but they're suggesting she was born in 89 and Newt was born in 97, right? So that would make her, like, 12 years? No, 9 years older than him, I think. It says, McGonagall seems to have been close with Albus Dumbledore even before he confronted Grindelwald in 1945. So that's kind of questionable, too, because, like, if she really was born in 1935, that would only make her 10, so how would she know Dumbledore at that point? Because there's a quote from the short story, or the ebook, that says, Albus Dumbledore offered both comfort and wisdom. He told Minerva some of his own family history, previously unknown to her. The confidences exchanged that night between two intensely private and reserved characters were to form the basis of a lasting mutual esteem and friendship. Minerva McGonagall was one of only a handful of people who knew or suspected how dreadful a moment it was for Albus Dumbledore when, in 1945, he made the decision to confront and defeat the dark wizard Gellert Grindelwald. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And then lastly, last thing.
No,
you're says, good. It says that McGonagall did not teach Tom Riddle, which kind of makes me believe that there may have been a leave of absence from Hogwarts for her.
I agree. That's my thing. Like, I think that she never says when she's talking to Umbridge, like, she consecutively taught there. So, like, there is a chance that she did leave. Like, she taught a little bit. Left, and maybe when she left, because I know we know that Dumbledore taught Transfiguration because he at least taught it to McGonagall.
Yes,
did he teach Transfiguration to Voldemort? I really wanted to call him Credence, which is not who he is.
I would assume so, because he was a professor of Transfiguration at the time that Voldemort was in Hogwarts.
But that's what I'm saying. Was he? Because as of right now, like, in 1927, he's teaching Defense Against the Dark Arts.
But he just lost that position. They just told him he wasn't allowed to teach it anymore, remember? But, so I bet he did go back to Transfiguration.
My thing is that, like, they tell him that, they put the cuffs on him, and then the cuffs come off at the end of the year. Not end of the movie, I mean. Yeah. So did he teach it while she was there, and then she takes her leave of absence? Like, he taught Defense Against the Dark Arts while McGonagall was there. McGonagall takes her leave of absence, and then he goes back to teaching Transfiguration.
Possibly.
If he taught it to Voldemort. Tom Riddle. Whatever his name is. That bro.
I think there's a lot of, I'm sure, purposeful bits of information throughout all the things that we have to read that don't give us an exact time frame, because I know some people don't want to believe it, but I really do believe that Joe has known for a long time these character stories and where they go and how they are and all that kind of stuff, and I'm sure that this was done purposefully, that we're not able to track down her actual timeline, because she wanted to tell this story a different way.
So, but here's my thing. Even if she didn't have all of this stuff written out for 20 years, blah, 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 who are we to say anything about that, though? You know what I'm saying?
Us
as a fandom, everybody needs to just slow your roll. I'm going to say that.
Give me heat.
Whatever. Calm yourself. This is not your world. This is hers.
Girl, I feel you. I feel the same way.
Another part of her kind of, like, omitting some information, like, on Pottermore, she has a bunch of family trees, but I don't think she has Dumbledore's. She doesn't have the Lestranges. Like, there's certain ones that she doesn't have on there, probably because it's going to be part, we're going to find more information, and she doesn't want to give us too much now.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. No, you owe me a Coke. I have one last tiny little tidbit of information about McGonagall that I think I want to say kind of proves our point of an absence, potentially.
I like that absence thing.
Yeah. So this is from one of the ebooks. I think that McGonagall's mentioned in two of them, but I'm not sure which one this is, but it says her attitude was undoubtedly hardened by the intrusion at Hogwarts of Dolores Jane Umbridge, a Ministry inspector and Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher, with whom Minerva clashed more violently than any other colleague in her long and varied career.
Whoa.
So, based on the information that we have, her career doesn't sound very varied. However, the fact that it says that must say that there is some other variant we don't know of.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I would love it if she went and studied somewhere or went off as a cat and did some cat stuff.
I don't want to do that.
You want to do cat stuff?
Lived as a house cat with some family.
Well, I bet she did. I bet you she did a lot of spying for like Dumbledore and like the good side. Do you know what I mean?
Yep. Oh yeah.
I
what if that was her job? What if that was her role? Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
Cat spy.
She did teach Lily and James. We know though for sure. Like she was definitely there for the Marauders period. So she came back even while like the war was brewing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But leading up to that, who knows, like, what Dumbledore had her up to. Look at all the stuff Dumbledore's got Newt up to right now. I mean...
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say, so...
put Hagrid through. Holy cow.
Pulling, like, information out today, because there was another theory that we're going to talk about in the next episode with the duel between Grindelwald and Dumbledore in 1945. Someone was like, oh, it's not actually a duel. They don't duel. They just kind of, like, have a thing because of the blood pact. But I was like, I wanted to see if she used that exact wording, so I was reading a lot. Not a lot, but, like, a bit in Deathly Hallows. I'm really excited to get to that book because I was like, ooh, it's so much information that, like, it pertains to, like, stuff we are learning now with this movie that, like, it correlates. Because then I was, like, reading The Life and Lies and reading, like, that's really when we hear about Dumbledore and Grindelwald and all that fun stuff. But tell us more about your thing that you pulled, Tiffany. Your McGonagall. Okay.
So, beating around the bush that whole time. There is a theory out there that the reason why we see McGonagall so young at this time teaching at Hogwarts is because she used a time turner from the ministry to go back. I already see people have opinions.
Just peppers.
And peppers about this issue. So, so it says maybe that the ministry permitted her to use a time turner to travel back a decade or two to help cover some lessons. Or there was one that said she wanted to study more with Dumbledore by using the time turner. I was like, can you do that as an adult? So
I'd be really, really upset if it was a time turner, because like time turner is the main focus of Cursed Child. So to do that, and it's a main focus of one of the Potter books, and to do it in the way that these people are theorizing is not exciting to me at all.
No.
So I hope it would not. Just
I have a hard no on this theory. I will be extremely upset if this is the solution. Yeah. Resolution. Yeah. I don't think that it is because, we don't see Jo reuse many things like that. I mean, she makes correlations to things that she's done, which I'll get to that with Queenie, I think, maybe. But I just can't see her... That would be a cop-out, in my opinion. And, like... It doesn't, like Katie said, like, it's not exciting to be like, oh, I wanted to go back and study with Dumbledore. Like, why even put her in there? Like, that's not important to the story, mm-hmm. has nothing to do with it. It would just be so random mm-hmm. and, like, just a stupid thing to say just mm-hmm. to have her face and her name be in there as, like, a cameo.
Yeah. Like, they would drive me insane.
Yeah.
Like, I probably would not want to watch the rest of the movies if that's what it turned out to be. I'd be like, all right.
Yeah, really against it.
Yeah. A lot of people were saying originally that it was like a relative of hers, but no, this is
it literally says in the screenplay, the class laughs, the door opens, Travers, Theseus, and four other Aurors enter, young Minerva McGonagall behind them. So it says in the book, we know that she was named after her great grandmother, her grandmother on her dad's side, and her dad was a Muggle, so.
And her mom's name is Isabel, so that's not.
Yeah, like and that. It can't be, like, her. So her dad's side, which holds the name McGonagall, is the Muggle side of her family. Yeah. So, like, correct. It can't be an aunt or something like that. That doesn't, unless they're Muggle-born, but I, again, would kind of feel like that would be a cop-out answer. If they're like, oh, there just happens to be another Minerva McGonagall, like, distantly related. Like, no, that would just be ridiculous. It has to be her.
Yeah.
Just totally random, But in that same scene with, like, that kid that he, like, makes him fly back and sit in the armchair, his last name is McLagan, but mm-hmm. it's spelled a little bit different than the kid that McCormick's last name. One's spelled with an A. Oh. So I was like, I wonder if they're related. I don't know. I don't think they are because their names are lames. Their names are spelled different.
Their names are lame, clearly.
That's kind of disappointing. I wanted them to be related.
Me too.
But like, sometimes names change spelling.
That's true, actually.
My maiden name did. I'm not grasping at straws there or anything.
All in all, I will say when I first heard about her being in it, and before I really read anything that could possibly change my mind, I was like, I'm not a big fan. I'm not on board. I'm not one of those people that likes things in the movie just to like.
Yeah,
like Easter egg kind of things like that are just in there for no reason, like mm-hmm. if they don't make any sense. But after reading the article where like she could be born earlier, like significantly earlier than we thought, like I'm like, okay, if that's really how it happens, I'm okay with that. I don't use a time turner. I don't like it.
Honestly, guys, I don't think she will.
No, I don't think I so hope either. Not.
Down with yeah. time turners.
I think that this timeline that we were kind of like figuring out with her possibly being born in 1889 really could make sense, and I think that people need to give this a chance. Let her answer for this before you just like get really mad at Joe mm-hmm. about this. I think that it really is going to make sense, and I think it's purposeful that we don't know a lot about McGonagall's background. Like, yeah. her timeline, like, yeah, her year timeline, mm-hmm. at least. I mean, we do, in fact, know a lot about her background, but we don't know specific dates and times. So, mm-hmm. Just be patient. It's gonna play out. But I think that it works, and I like it.
Yeah.
If McGonagall... Well, like, and another thing... Go ahead. Oh, sorry, Katie, you go ahead.
No, go ahead. There you go. It was stupid.
No, it wasn't. Stupid.
I was going to say, if McGonagall can sit on a wall all day and be patient, so can you.
It's true, though. That's the thing, guys. When has Joe ever, like, not had purpose behind what she does? Yeah, never. She always has a purpose for everything. So we just need to sit back. And this is the stuff we said was the good stuff, right? We talked about how we miss theorizing. And how it was exciting not to know what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. We're living it. So just embrace it. Because you only get to do this so much with your favorite series. Go ahead.
So we did say, like, the OG Pottermore site had her birthday as 1935.
October 4th, yes.
Yeah, and her birthday is still October 4th.
Right.
My biggest thing is, like, we've said time and time again, like, this is Joe's world. She's also allowed to change her mind.
Yeah,
like,
true.
We don't, as much as we think we have a hold on this, it's nobody's story but hers.
Correct.
So, like, if she decides, and it makes sense, where she could fit it in and have her birthday be whenever, like...
Yep.
I'm okay with it, because it's her world and I'm just living in it.
True. Oh, so. I'm right there with you.
Yep, I don't hate it. I'm waiting with bated breath to see what's going to happen. I just hope she doesn't let me down.
I mean, we've got three more.
She's never really let me down, so...
She did once to me.
Well, I mean, like, yeah, there's obviously parts of the story where I'm like, this makes me sad, but... I mean, I'm not disappointed in anything she's written. Like, she wrote it for a purpose, and she had her purpose, and I love it. So...
Yeah.
I'm here for it.
Any final thoughts on McG?
Nope,
pretty
BA. I like her. Yep.
Yeah.
Someone say that you would call her a cool cat.
After doing the Felix Files on McGonagall and now this, like, I really like her. Minus her whole point issues, you know, how I feel about her points. But besides that, like, she is a cool cat.
Meg, you're not allowed to like her because you gave her so much hell.
You just said a bad
word. She's one of my faves.
Beep.
Whatever. Gave her H-E double hockey sticks.
Okay.
I know how to spell.
Do we want to talk about Queenie?
No. All
right, let's move on right meow.
That was perfect.
So, like, before I dive into these really cool, crazy theories, I just want everybody's first reactions. Do you think she's a double agent?
No.
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 I don't know. I'm kind of, okay, I'm going to try and convince you with this Reddit article. It is legit.
You find and some makes good articles.
A lot of sense. So shout out to Borsati Hermione on Reddit. They are in the, this is like the fan theory, Harry Potter board fan theories on Reddit. So they think that Queenie is Snape 2.0. And, or I guess really Snape is Snape 2.0, right? Because this happens first, but...
No, Snape is Queenie Snape. 2.0.
Yeah, right? True. Snape's actually Queenie 2.0.
She's first.
So we do know that both of them, well, it's kind of, it's so it's difficult. So Queenie's gift of reading minds, it was a gift. She can do this. It's not something she had to learn. It is just something she was born with. However, with Snape, he did have to learn it. Mm-hmm. So he learned how to be a Legilimens. He learned occlumency. That word always stumbles me up. But Queenie, it was just, it's just a part of her. So that is their two biggest differences. However, I think what is interesting... and they say here, Abernathy is the key to understanding the behavior of Queenie and Tina in this film. So I complained a lot about Queenie's character development, and I feel like we missed out on a lot. And I think that a lot of her character development happened from Abernathy. And the reason why I think that that is the case, because we know that Abernathy is kind of somewhat of like a supervisor to the Goldsteins at MACUSA. So he kind of, like, oversees what they do, and it's, so, and we know Queenie can read his mind, because she did in the first film, so why wouldn't she be able to read his mind now, while mm-hmm. he is playing Grindelwald in the cell, right? So he takes over for Grindelwald, and he's in the cell, so here's the theory. So once Abernathy started acting strange and finally disappeared in order to serve Grindelwald and take his place in prison, Tina and Queenie possibly caught on to what was happening due to Queenie being able to hear what's going on in Abernathy's head. So therefore, she and her sister knew more than most others about Grindelwald's plan and perhaps even how Credence was a part of it. I think that, obviously, Tina always knew that Credence was a part of Grindelwald's plan from the first movie. She could tell that he clearly was attracted to him in some way for whatever he was. But now that Queenie can read Abernathy's mind and he's turning to Grindelwald's side, possibly the information that the both of them gather kind of give them this conclusion. So Queenie, when the escape happened, the sisters end up hatching a plan to go to Paris to find Credence and save him from being killed by Aurors from the ministries of several countries, such as the Ministry of Magic in Great Britain and the Ministry of Magic in France. Mm-hmm. Because it kind of seems almost like Tina's on her own mission a little bit.
Yeah.
She doesn't really seem to have... guidance from MACUSA at any stage of this film. She's just kind of over there searching for Credence on her own. Do we even know how she knows that he's alive still?
Is she employed by the ministry still?
Yes, she's an Auror. She's an Auror.
Yeah, now. But they don't seem to really
care where she is.
Craps where she's at.
Exactly. So I kind of am wondering if, like, Queenie and Tina came up with this plan to kind of, like, yeah, she's still employed, but she's just kind of, like, disappeared. And Queenie's poster says whereabouts unknown. So, like, is that because MACUSA doesn't know where they are? And they're just kind of, like, on their own mission together? They also plan to enlist the help of Newt. And obviously we know that how that happens is Queenie shows up with Jacob at his flat in London, and they're just in his life again, and he just accepts it because he's happy to have them there, and it's a connection to Tina, and he's all about it. So it's important to note that Tina and Queenie gain new knowledge by becoming friends with Newt. So Tina was present at Newt's interrogation at MACUSA, so she knows he wasn't really in New York for Appaloosa Puffskins or even his Thunderbird Frank. It was mostly a cover story for his mission on behalf of Dumbledore. So following Newt's example, the sisters develop their own cover story for their trip to Europe. So Tina going to Paris as her Auror self, seeking out credence, as she always has, and as Grindelwald would fully expect her to. Queenie travels to England on the pretense of marrying Jacob, but really only to recruit Newt to help them. So Queenie purposefully leaves the torn-up Paris postcard in the London house for Newt to find so that he could join the sisters in their mission in Paris. It seems like too much of a coincidence in Paris when Queenie enters the ministry just after Rosier and her former boss Abernathy. You think she can't read Abernathy's mind, even though he's using Polyjuice Potion to be this old lady pushing a cart. So it's just kind of interesting looking, like, reading this and then looking back at scenes from the film. Was it purposeful that Queenie was there and happened to drop all of her stuff in the direction of those two as they're walking by? She can probably read their minds. Rosier does speak English. I know that she doesn't necessarily always speak it or think it, though. So, like, maybe she can't understand her, but she could definitely understand Abernathy's thoughts at that time. And let me see. Things have to have gone a little haywire, however, when Queenie drank the tea at Grindelwald's hideout, possibly, and came under his manipulative influence at this point. So I wonder if, like, maybe that wasn't in the cards. That wasn't expected. So that could have kind of, like, thrown the plans a little bit off. But I think that the theory with, like, her tracking Abernathy makes sense. And I think that she was trying to possibly be a double agent in that sense, where she's keeping tabs on Abernathy and she knows that he's involved with Grindelwald. So, like, in a way, she is a double agent, but at this, I don't know. Okay, hold on. Before I go on, does anybody have anything to say about that theory?
Take a breath.
I know it's a lot, but, like, honestly, everything they were saying, I was just like, oh, wow, that makes sense. Yeah, that kind of makes sense. I don't know.
The beauty of Potter is, like, almost anything can make sense. So, right. Like, you could really almost convince somebody of any theory. And this, I think this one's included. It could happen. I mean, it could be totally possible, because the fact that Queenie could read his mind.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really important, because for a while Abernathy wasn't Abernathy, he was Grindelwald.
Mm-hmm.
But that's really interesting.
Yeah, and I don't fully understand the magic they used with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
aside from all of this, right, how and when has it ever happened that a character who is so sweet and cheerful like her ever gone so completely dark?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, if you think of, like, Anakin Skywalker, I guess. He was a cute little kid, right? Goes super dark. But I'm sorry. I just think that, I know you love Queenie, but I think it would be so, like, amazing if her character just completely fell 100% dark side.
It would be interesting. I'm not against it.
I think it would be really, really cool.
I just think, like, it shows you. I'm not, like, really on board, because, like, when she meets Newt for the first time, she's like, I have trouble, like, reading your kind, basically, like, with anybody with an accent. She says it's more difficult for her, is essentially what I gathered when she said that to him, to hear their thoughts. But, like, I think it shows the power of Grindelwald being able to manipulate them so much that he knows the words and how to say it, and, you know, to make her think he's going to give her exactly what he wants, when really he's just going to end up using her because he knows what she can do.
Yeah, I think I think that there are so many different directions that her character could take.
Oh yeah.
So, like, she could be the double agent spy like Snape. She could be, you know, fully good still, like, have great intentions, and it's his manipulation that is like, oh yeah, this sounds good, but her heart is still pure, you know? Or she could just totally go down the rabbit hole of being evil through his manipulation.
The rabbits are so advanced, they don't have a hole, they have a hall now.
Yeah, okay.
Well, they do, like, there's that saying that, like, the road to hell was paved in good intentions. So she could very well have all the good intentions in the world, because at the end of the day, she just wants to marry the man that she loves. And so, like, there's nothing wrong with that. So I get where she's coming from. But at the same time, like, I think that when he at least thought, like, thought that she was crazy, like, that was the end of it. You know what I mean? And she still loved him and she still wanted to try. And then she hears all these wonderful things that Grindelwald's willing to give her, being like, I'm going to be able to make sure that you can marry him, blah, 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 even though he called you crazy. I'm not a big fan of him right now, but.
Well, I have two things on it. The first one I forgot, but the second part, when he thinks that she's crazy and then he says it or whatever, there's got to be more than that. To her than just someone calling you crazy. So, for example, if Marty would be like, you're crazy, I'd be like, okay.
But he didn't say it like that.
But you know what I'm saying? If he called me crazy, it was a heated thing, okay, that's one thing. But if I had been, if I had that word used against me over and over and over again in my life, that she's got a backstory with that word. That has a particular meaning for her.
Well, and I bet you he knows it, too. If they legitimately were, like, so in love and wanted to be married, he knows that.
Yeah.
And so he's purposefully, in my mind, using that to hurt her, which is messed up. Don't do that.
Yeah. I think also, though, that he I think he struggles to find another word to use because, like, I don't think that he obviously doesn't, at least I don't think he means it in the way that other people meant it. But I think that he's just trying to get across to her that she's not thinking straight.
Right.
I don't think he personal opinion, I don't think he purposefully meant to hurt her. I just think that was his natural reaction.
Yeah.
To be like, you're being crazy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I agree.
Well, not that it's really the same, but it also reminds me of when Snape calls Lily Mudblood. Similar, not the same, but not like she same, takes in that way being like, you used a word that's so hurtful to me, regardless of how. Yeah. Like that's how. And maybe that really is what solidifies Queenie's decision to be like, nah, I'm walking through the flames. Even though she still wants him to come with her. Love's a crazy thing, my friends.
Isn't it though?
I like, I think that Hypeable has really put out some, like, really good theory articles, and there's another one that talks about, so a lot of people's qualms, is that I think the right word? I don't know. Against the whole Queenie going to the dark side, quote, is that it doesn't make sense. That is just, like, everybody is like, no, it doesn't fit her character, it doesn't make sense.
Okay. I think it makes perfect sense.
Well, I love it.
I agree. And I
love it.
They posted this article that says Queenie's, hold on, what is the title? It says, Why Queenie Joining Grindelwald Makes Sense for Her Character. Title, makes sense. So it goes on to say, the result is that many viewers might have felt blindsided by Queenie's ultimate decision to join Grindelwald, seemingly without any remorse at all. But why Queenie joined wasn't out of character for her. What we saw was something that happens often in history. Grindelwald is not the same kind of villain we're used to seeing in Voldemort. He's clever, manipulative, extremely persuasive. Even more persuasive is the fact that he wields truth and compassion to rally witches and wizards to a misguided cause.
What does that sound like?
Hitler. So, like all leaders of racist movements, Grindelwald persuades vast numbers of people to do the unspeakable by oversimplifying the truth. All the problems of the world are because the magical world hasn't controlled muggles, and so wizarding governments must be overthrown and replaced by a more authoritative one. So for Queenie, who spent so many years living in fear because of her relationship with Jacob and the fact that she has legitimacy, a lot of what Grindelwald is saying, like, rings true to her. She was against the current government that ruled, you know, that she can't marry Jacob. And the prospect of a Second World War is also terrifying, not only for her, but for her husband, because her boyfriend, because he won't marry her. But, it's terrifying for him, too.
The boyfriend.
Because he doesn't want to go in another World War. He already lived through one. He knows what that's like, and he doesn't want that to happen again. So she has a hunger for truth and was desperate to be appreciated for her skills. Yes, Sarah.
All I want to say, and I know I've said this probably a million times when we ended up on this topic, with him being persuasive, Hitler was elected. Like, that's right. How persuasive he was. You know, he preyed on all those people's fears and all of the things, and he was so, like...
Fear.
He was able to do it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Fear-mongering.
So he was able to do all of those things, and people liked him, and they liked him enough to vote him into office. And so, like, that's something that I think that people forget, you know, that he just didn't become a dictator or became all of those things just from him taking over office. He was voted into it, which this is like, it reminds me so much of Grindelwald being so persuasive and manipulative and charming and charismatic enough to do that. And, you know, a lot of psychopaths are also like that. Wasn't Ted Bundy really attractive and he killed all those people?
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so
wow.
Those, you
that
see that.
Okay.
I'm just saying, this is also things that remind me of, like, you know.
It's real life, you know what I mean? Draws from real life. Katie?
I know someone... Ooh, sorry, I hit the microphone. This is going around on the internet, and I think someone posted in our group, and, like, I think it was meant to be sort of funny, but it rings really true with this series. It's like when you're hearing a villain do their monologue and you're thinking, huh, if I didn't know that Grindelwald was a dark, bad wizard, if you didn't see him kill people, if you didn't know, and you show up to that thing and you hear the way he preaches, and then he manipulates those aurors to do exactly what he wants, and one of his followers ends up getting killed, if you're looking at it from that perspective, he looks absolutely correct.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which is crazy. That blows my mind.
Well, yeah, I mean, we even talked about it, Sarah.
Yeah.
I had
friends text me being like, oh, no, I'm on board with him. And I'm like, what? But you know what he's going to do. But, like, that's the thing with us is that we know where this is going.
Right.
We know
if
what
you,
real intentions are.
Yeah.
But if you didn't.
Where would you go? You know?
It's that's how persuasive it is where people are like, no, like, I can see why people join his cause.
Yeah.
And it's scary.
It's hard to take.
It's terrifying.
It's really hard to take a step back because. And pretend like you don't know the future of this series, because if you're living in that moment and you're seeing the things that he's showing you, like the war and everything, I mean, imagine, like, just, you know, imagine we're our age back at that time, and our fathers were in the war, World War I, and then we see him show that. I would be like, oh my God, can we please do anything to make sure that they don't have to go back to that? Yes, I'm on board.
Right.
Like, it's realistic.
Fear. Brian, your fear.
Oh, yeah.
And Queenie has so much fear right now, and that's why, like, he's using her. And he also obviously knows her powers, because he's using her to help him with Credence. Yeah, Sarah, did you have something to say?
Well, just, like, on her being herself, like, I think that she's such... So we know that she's a legitimate, but she even... seems like an empath kind of person where she's getting, so not only is she feeling all these things herself, but she's getting all the emotions from people around her because she could hear them. So, like, I think that makes her also more vulnerable to being like, I need something, I need, like, the answer. And she thinks the answer is Grindelwald being able to make her life exactly what she wants it to be. And really, at the end of the day, she just wants to be, like, have a family with Jacob.
Mm-hmm.
And she thinks that her answer is Grindelwald and he's going to give it to her. And she's hoping that not only he's going to give her answer, but all those other people that around her that are also fearing going back to the war and having muggles, like, ruin the planet, which...
Yeah.
Can't say they're wrong.
I mean, to be honest, I understand.
Yeah. I also liked in this article, it says, in the midst of her inner crisis, which already moved her to do drastic, alarming things such as... cast a spell on Jacob, which seemed super out of character. Grindelwald's movement was like a breath of fresh air to her. So it was a way for the previously, in her eyes, cold world she lived in to finally change to something that she viewed as better. And honestly, a lot of people viewed as better. And honestly, what Queenie wants is better. I mean, like, yeah, that does make sense. I just want to be able to marry the love of my life. So Queenie just, like, couldn't fathom the extent to which things could change for the worst. So, like, in her mind, they were already at their worst. She wasn't viewing, it's gonna get worse. She was like, no, we're there. It's just gonna get better.
That's a really good point.
Yeah. I really just want to say, though, that, like, I really feel like her character development sucked in this film. Like, they could have done so much more for her, and it's, like, her story was the most disappointing thing in Crimes of Grindelwald for me, because I felt like it was just cut short,
and it was rushed. Now, let's go back. Take a minute, Meg. What if this is her intro to building her? I mean, I bet you're gonna get a ton of Queenie next movie. You're gonna get so much Queenie, it's gonna make you sick.
I don't think that's possible.
I don't think she's gonna be in it at all.
Oh, that could be true.
What if that happened?
What if there was, like, Queenie's on a mission, don't ask about her.
And that's like Hagrid, he's just gone for, like, all of Order of the Phoenix.
She shows up at the end with a dragon stake on her eye. What's up?
I was thinking that, Katie. It's so funny you said that. She's like, oh, let me tell you about it.
I have one last kind of bizarre theory that probably won't take very long because, like, I don't think it's true, but I just think that it is
cool
that people thought of this. So there is a potential plot line in Fantastic Beasts of maybe Queenie being Snape's grandmother.
Barf. Just kidding. just kidding. That's weird, though. How?
Yeah.
Give me reasoning. Back it up.
So, it says here that they found this original theory in a video online from Seamus Gordon, so shout out to him. But it says they start out with explaining exactly what legilimency and occlumency are. So legilimency is described by Snape in the fifth book as the magical act of navigating through the many layers of a person's mind and correctly interpreting one's findings. But occlumency is the power to close one's mind against legilimency. So J.K. Rowling did say Snape had to train a slight natural ability. Queenie was born with a great talent, though she's not infallible. So, just, like, comparing them. It says here, when I first saw Fantastic Beasts, I instantly fell in love with Queenie. She seemed a little ditzy at first, and one could easily judge her based on the fact that she seemed to be one of those women who cared more about how they looked rather than intelligence. This was quickly proved wrong, however, and we learned that Queenie was much more intelligent than she let on. You're a legilimens is what Newt says, and she said, yeah, but I always have trouble with your kind. Brits, it's the accent. It says, hold on, sorry, I'm pausing here for a second. And then they just said, who else do we know in the Harry Potter series that is similar to that? They were often excluded from groups and made fun of literally because they were different, which I'm assuming happened to Queenie because, you know, of her whole thing with the word crazy. I'm guessing that that may have been a thing back at Ilvermorny, possibly. She was teased. So they have that in common. Severus was also a very powerful legilimens and occlumens. He was able to shield his mind from Voldemort for an incredibly long time, and on doing so was part of the reason why Harry defeated Voldemort at all. I would go so far as to say he's the most powerful legilimens of the Harry Potter series until we meet Queenie. Just do you hear me? Queenie's better than Snape. Just kidding. I mean, I think that that's true, but you don't have to think that's true. it says here, in order for Snape to have this ability, it would have had to have been passed down through genetics. We know that his mother's name was Eileen Prince and his father's name was Tobias Snape, but we're not focusing on Tobias, we're focusing on Eileen, more specifically who's Eileen's parents are. According to Pottermore, Prince isn't part of the sacred 28 pureblood families, so like Snape, this also means that Eileen could be half-blood or born from a person of magical ancestry and a muggle. Who do we know in Fantastic Beasts who doesn't mind and actually falls in love with a muggle by the end of the movie? That's right, it's Queenie. So, is that his grandparents? I think it's a stretch.
Queenie.
I just think it's interesting.
Interesting.
Did you guys hear that there's an American wizard that's Quentin Kowalski?
Yes.
Have you guys heard about that? So I wonder, like, yes.
Yeah.
On Pottermore, when she was writing about the Quidditch World Cup in 2014, it was USA versus Jam, which is Jamaica. I just like that they have Jam. But he's a chaser, and he was the U.S. chaser, Quentin Kowalski.
Interesting.
Which I think is, like, cool that maybe We don't know if they're related. I don't think that's, like, something it's canon or anything yet.
Yeah.
But it could. I think that'd be pretty cool.
I think it would be cool because that means that they got to go back to America and live their life how they wanted in America.
But it might not be with Queenie. What if he meets another witch?
True.
Maybe she's not the witch for him. Maybe she marries a prince and he marries someone else. And that really is Snape's grandma.
And then they have a queen.
Witch is a really great sandwich place.
Witch is a good book by Roald Dahl, whatever his name is, right?
Roald Dahl.
Yeah, Roald. That dude.
I said Ronald. Ronald McDonald.
Y'all, get it together.
But I would like it if that Quentin Kowalski was like his relative. It'd be like a little cute nugget that we would have gotten pre-movies, you know? Yeah.
I like nugget as opposed to Easter egg. Nugget's cuter.
I agree.
Nuggets are delicious. Chicken, which is meat.
Tiffany, get out. The door's behind you.
All right, kids. 'Tis all for part one. Yeah, we're coming with Katie and Sarah on some really heavy-hitting things from the movie, which I personally cannot wait to talk about because...
Yeah, a lot of thoughts on Credence and Dumbledore, so...
Yes, and we're going to be doing that at my house rather than on Skype, and we're going to be getting to try our last coffee.
Oh, yeah. Oh, chocolate. Yeah. Cherry. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Charming. Yes. Chocolate.
I am
cherry.
Not kidding. I've been most excited for this coffee flavor, so...
I think I'm going to hate it.
So. I think I'm going to like it a little bit.
You thought you were going to hate the blueberry.
Well, good. I don't like cherries at all, like in anything, where I'll eat a blueberry muffin. I am also not a fan of chocolate in my coffee, and I can't drink hot chocolate, so I wonder if it's going to give me a headache, so we'll see.
Oh, no. Just take a sip of someone so you try it.
Yeah.
But you can have a sip. Maybe don't have a whole cup. We'll make you a whole cup of something else.
Well, I probably shouldn't be drinking. I have to work the next day anyway, so.
Yeah, true. But shout out to Expedition Roasters. If anybody wants to go get some of their awesome house-themed coffees, you can just go to expeditionroasters.com, and then we have, and I'm desperately trying to find it here really quickly, we have a coupon code, and it is SWISHFLICK15. You get 15% off. So, you should go buy some coffee, because it's really delicious.
I liked the Slytherin one the best. What was that called?
Caramel Crunch. Mm-hmm. I liked the Ravenclaw one the best so far, and that was, like, Blueberry Cobbler or something like that.
Yeah.
I think the Slytherin's been my favorite.
That was good, too, but...
I'm just partial to Slytherin.
The Blueberry was just so different. I think that's why I liked it.
You suck up.
All right.
Social media.
So make sure that you join our Facebook discussion group, Swish and Flick Podcast group on Facebook. We're also Swish and Flick Podcast on Facebook and Swish Flickcast on Twitter and Instagram. You can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/swishflickcast. And that is where you can gain access to the Felix Files. And we're doing our character breakdowns currently. We're on McGonagall. So check it out. And make sure that you check out our website too, swishflickcast.com. There is some cool merchandise on there. So for all you people who have extra spending money after Christmas, you should go buy some Swish merch.
You go Swish crazy.
Treat yourself. Yeah. 2018.
Almost 19.
All right. That concludes this Scamander story. Thank you so much for listening, and don't let the muggles get you down.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.